Hey, Hawkeye fans. Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register here with my broadcast and beat partner, Kennington Smith. And we are here on a Tuesday afternoon following Iowa's pre-Kent State press conferences. And we're going to talk about things that aren't Kent State today because we're going to do that more on our Wednesday night radio show. Right now, Kennington, we have not had a chance to really interact with our viewers or listeners. I guess they're listeners. We're still not on TV. But since the Hawkeyes became a top 10 team, the Hawkeyes number 5 in the Associated Press poll, it's been a fast rise from 17 in the or 18 in the preseason to now number 5 in the AP and 7 in the coaches. This is, I mean, it's gone fast, I guess. It's I don't know if they're the number 5 or 7 team in the country, but I guess just your thoughts initially. I mean, is this really a top 10 team?
I think that at this point, their ranking is more reflective of what they've earned and what they deserve versus kind of where they are as a team. I think that they've had the toughest two-game stretch of any team in the country, and for the most part, they have dominated both of those games, and for that, they are being rewarded by being ranked in the top 5, top 10, you know, depending on what poll you're looking at. So that's kind of how I look at it in terms of where they're ranked right now. You know, are they a top 10 team right now in the country? I mean, probably their defense alone, I think, you know, they have to be in that conversation. The offense hasn't been great, but for the most part, it hasn't hurt them in any games. It's done what they've needed it to do. So, you know, I feel like they're probably, you know, bare minimum in the top 15. I think that their fifth ranking is just a product of them being, you know, playing in these tough games. But, you know, I feel like it's fair considering what we've seen so far. You know, there are teams losing to ranked teams. Ohio State struggled with Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the score, you know, looks pretty close. But if you actually watch that game against Oregon pretty much controlled, right, you know, that game. We're seeing Notre Dame struggling with teams like, you know, Toledo and others. So, you know, I feel like level of competition in terms of just, you know, straight consistency, you know, these first two games, Iowa should be, you know, this is a deserving ranking, I should say.
Yeah. And Iowa, well said, actually. And as I've said before, I can't remember if it was on a podcast or what, but, you know, the Hawkeyes probably got some fortune with a lot of teams in front of them losing, you know, that you wouldn't expect to lose. You kind of just brought some of that up. So that's kind of accelerated their climb in the polls. And I guess with that acceleration in the polls also comes more scrutiny. And you're already hearing that on a national level. At least I have already on some national podcasts. Is, you know, they're thinking back to after two games, you know, there's already pundits out there. Oh, my gosh, you know, can we really live with an Iowa with this kind of offense in the playoff and, you know, stuff like that. And so that's just going to. In other words, the scrutiny about the offense is just, like, going crazy right now, I feel like. That was where a lot of the questions were today surrounding. And we talked about this in our post-game podcast. I don't put as much stock in it as other people. But at the same time, I guess, what are your thoughts when you hear – or when you're, you know, should Iowa's offense really be under the scrutiny that it's under right now?
I think that I would have to say – you know, I think it's fair when you consider, you know, just looking at the raw numbers, they are obviously not impressive.
126 out of 130.
Right.
Total offense. But that's yards, not points.
Exactly. Within the context of the game, you know, this is kind of one of those things where, you know, where they talk about casuals versus people who actually watch the game. Obviously, you know, we're at the games. We watch every single play. We understand that within the context of the game and within the nuance of the game, the offense has executed pretty much every time that they have been called on to execute. If you look at the numbers, you would think that, you know, they aren't doing much at all. So this is more of kind of like, are you actually watching what's going on, or are you just looking at the box scores and forming an analysis out of there? Now, what I will say is there will come a time where the offense is going to have to carry a larger load in this than what they have done so far. I think that, you know, that's fair to say, I think that's pretty obvious. At some point, like Kirk Ferentz said the same in the presser, at some point we're going to get into a 41-48 type of game. There's going to come a moment where the offense is going to need to kind of explode. But if you're just – if you watch the first two games in full, you would say they haven't really turned the ball over. Every time they've gotten the ball in favorable field position, they have scored. Yep. You know, Petras has managed the game well. In certain situations – the rushing attack has done what it's needed to do, especially against Iowa State. There were some short yardage situations in the second quarter where they pretty much had their way, and that helped kind of break the game open. So they've been good in spots. There isn't that start-to-finish consistency, which is, you know, a word that Ferentz used today. Tyler Linderbaum uses it every time that we talk to him. So, you know, I think that – you know, you can give the offense a little bit of grace, but I do think that, you know, the majority of this criticism is probably coming from people who really aren't watching what's happening. They're just kind of looking at raw stats and, you know, basing an opinion off of that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I took away from my DVR Monday rewatch, too, is that, I mean, I think there was a lot of positives to look at in that second quarter offense, exactly what you said. I mean, they moved that second touchdown drive, they moved 71 yards pretty darn efficiently in a tough situation where they needed to, well, at least they felt like they needed or had the opportunity to take some chances. I mean, there was some, Petras made a couple tough throws on that drive, if I recall correctly. And I think the one was one to Laporta, right? To start the drive on third and 15 for 21 yards. And then he finishes that drive with a beautiful throw to Charlie Jones. There were a couple other tosses in there as well, but I guess that was one instance where, and even Kirk Ferentz said it today, you know, you can't be to the extreme conservative. We're never going to do anything. I feel like in the second quarter in Ames, they had a 7-3 lead, 5 minutes to go in the first half. Felt, okay, here's a chance to take control of the game. They kind of let the offense do that. They did that. And after that, you know, Ferentz's answers today were more, he felt that, I think the momentum and the way the game was feeling, he used that word, a feel of the game, that they just did not want to take any chances at all of giving that game away, which Iowa State kind of, they just kind of let Iowa State, you know, give that game away with the way they were playing defense. So I do, I guess I'm totally with you on the offense will need to do something, but I also am of the opinion that they really haven't tried to do much of anything other than run the clock and not turn it over in each of the first two games, first halves. So we've only seen really four quarters of Iowa's offense kind of trying to do stuff. And I'm looking at the scoring stats and they're, you know, 30.5 points per game is 67th in the country. So that's way better than you can't look at yardage always. Got to look at points.
Right. And again, we are not saying that the offense, you know, is, you know, where they are supposed to be at, you know, at this point in the year. Obviously, you know, there are improvements to be made. But, you know, like you said, within the context of the game and how the game is going, like, you don't, at least from my point of view, I wouldn't want Iowa's offense to just take chances just to say that they are taking chances or they're being aggressive just for the sake of being aggressive. You know, the more that they try, the more that you try to, you know, be overly aggressive, the more you try to push it down the field. Obviously, the other side of that is there's an opportunity for you to potentially turn the ball over, bad snap, strip sack. Something could happen. I think that, you know, ultimately you play to win the game. I think these first two games have really just been defensively driven offense. Just don't do anything to put us in a bind, and they've done that so far. Is every game going to go like that? Probably not, but these first two have.
Well said, man. Well said. And I do think you make a great point there. Like, if, you know, if this really is a potential playoff contender, and that's weird to say two games into the season, but they're in that ranking spot where they are going to be scrutinized. I mean, that certainly wasn't the preseason expectation, but now they're kind of in that conversation already. Yeah, the offense is going to have to, you know, they're going to have to do something. And I guess just listening to Kirk Ferentz today, again, with him, you always have to kind of just read the clues. He did say that he thinks they've got good guys in the team, that they've got a chance to be good. And he used the word getting crisper. You know, they're not too far off there. But he also did talk about the inexperience on the offensive line being a factor, and you can't deny that. I mean, you're starting a left tackle in Mason Richmond, who's a redshirt freshman. He's playing okay, but he's not playing like Tristan Wirfs did, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. But then you've got Nick DeYoung on the right tackle side. I thought he had a pretty poor game on Saturday at right tackle, and they kind of got away with it. So, and they're rotating guards, you know, with Justin Britt and Connor Colby, a true freshman. Justin Britt, first-time starter. And Cody Ince is like a veteran on that line, and he started less than a full season's worth of games. So outside of Tyler Lindebaum, you don't have a lot of experience up front, but now Hawkeyes are getting some help. Kyler Schott, practicing this week, fifth-year senior right guard. This seems like a really positive development and potentially at the right time.
Right, and, you know, this is kind of a to-be-continued type of thing. Now, Kyler Schott is not going to start on Saturday, I believe. He's going to play some. Ferris said he's going to play some. We don't know how much he's going to play. I feel like by the time Colorado State, Maryland rolls around, he should be a full go. I'm not confirming. This is me speculating. But let's say – so they play Kent State on Saturday without getting too far into this rabbit hole of Kent State. But they're playing Kent State on Saturday. They will have opportunities to run the ball on them 100%. Colorado State, with all due respect to them, is probably in the bottom tier of teams in the country. Maryland is a Big Ten team. We expect Iowa to win that game, you know, kind of handily. If the offense 3 weeks from now has not made any strides between now and then we can probably have a conversation of what's going on with the offense. But, you know, these next three games, I think, are great opportunities for the offense to kind of find a rhythm, get a little more confidence, get something going, especially starting to convert on third down. I think is something that we should probably be talking about, or fans or national, whoever should be talking about a little bit more instead of raw yardage. Like, that's something I think is a little huge bit more step, of a concern. So, you know, 3 weeks from now, if the offense hasn't made any strides, I feel like we might have a problem. But right now, I mean, you know, if I told you, you know, a month ago, they'd be 2-0 right now and dominated both teams, you would have taken it no matter how it came.
Yeah, the average margin of victory in Iowa's wins, I believe, if I'm doing the math right in my head, is, well, all I have to do is 19. Yeah, 38 total points. So there you go. Yeah, that's pretty good. Kent State, we will preview them more on the radio show tomorrow, but 116th in the country in rushing defense, allowing 220-plus. And one of those games was against Virginia Military Institute. The other was Texas A&M. Yeah, so kind of a couple extremes there, but they're allowing almost 6 yards per carry, so 5.58. So that's it. You're right. Opportunity there for the Hawkeyes to, I would say, keep it on the ground, especially with Kent State's 8 interceptions this season. Now, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the O-line, just because I'm curious what it's going to look like not only this Saturday, but going forward. I mean, what does Kyler Schott do now? Because they've been rotating two guys they like a lot at right guard, and Justin Britt and Connor Colby. They like both those guys a lot. They want to play them. But Kyler Schott's better than them. So when he comes back, what happens to those guys? Do they go to the bench? Are they in a rotation somewhere else? What does Cody Ince do? These are interesting things. I get the sense that they like Richmond at left tackle for now. I don't see that changing. Do you?
No. I think that's I think, you know, I like him at left tackle. Like you said, he hasn't been spectacular, but, you know, he hasn't been a turnstile. It's not like, you know.
I like that word.
It's not like, you know, he's just running for his life every snap with him there. It's going to be interesting. Like, I would like to – in my mind, the way that it would go, let's say Schott comes back and he is who we expect him to be, then, you know, it would be kind of difficult to take him off of the field, especially because these conversations have been kind of like, well, the offensive line isn't performing this well because they're, you know, so young. You add him into the mix, and then in that interior you have, you know, three veterans. I feel like it'll be pretty difficult for them to kind of, you know, rock the boat there or do a lot of substitutions when you feel really strongly about the interior of the line. The tackles, I think, are a little bit more of a question mark. So, you know, that's where I would foresee more rotation. I think that there's opportunity for Connor Colby at tackle. That was a name that we heard a lot in preseason, you know, after Kids Day scrimmage, you know, he's one of four tackles, but now he's playing guard. I think just, you know, out of just wanting to get him on the field and just to see what we can do, there's more opportunity at guard than tackle right now. But that's kind of where I foresee any substitutions or shaking things up. I think the interior, when Shaq comes back, should he come back and perform at the level we're expecting him to, I think the interior is pretty set in stone.
Yeah, I think I think there's options here because let's say they do stick with Richmond at left tackle, which they basically did throughout the Iowa State game. Kirk Ferentz talked about him today, you know, in a very positive way, likes how he's coming along pretty quickly. And you got to feel good if you have a redshirt left tackle, a redshirt freshman left tackle that's gotten you through the first two games and like you said, you know, didn't get the quarterback killed. I think Cody Ince, obviously, you know, he's been left guard all year, hasn't budged. Good chance he stays there. What I think here's my prediction of what we'll see Saturday. I think we'll see, and this is what I would do, given what we've seen thus far. I would rotate Justin Britt and Kyler Schott at right guard. That way you're kind of soft launching Schott and getting him acclimated. Now, he may start and play the whole game. Who knows? But, you know, I think Britt has done okay. And I wouldn't be surprised if they started him one more time and brought Schott off the bench. Maybe they rotate there. And then I would slide Connor Colby out to right tackle this week and maybe alternate him with Nick DeYoung, because I thought DeYoung had a really tough game against Iowa State. And I think you want to keep Colby's progression going, see what he can do out there. And if he stinks, you know, if he stinks at right tackle, you just put DeYoung back in there, or Jack Plum. You got some options at right tackle. I mean, basically, I think you're right. I think I would settle on Ince, Linderbaum, and Schott just inside. Get three salty linemen for the future up the middle. That's right. You don't want to get wrecked up the middle because you're going to face better and good defensive tackles coming up. So that's what I would do. They do have the option, as we know, on the spring depth chart to move Cody Ince out to right tackle. If they really don't like what they're seeing at right tackle with anybody, they can move Ince out to right tackle. That's where he was in spring, and maybe put, you know, Kyler Schott at left guard and Justin Britt at right guard. I mean, they could do that too.
Right.
And so I think George Burnett has some options.
Yeah. It's good to have – this is a good conversation to have. Instead of – you know, I say this from the viewpoint of, you know, it's much better to say we have eight offensive linemen who we feel pretty good about. We're comfortable playing all eight of these guys at this place versus, you know, we have – three guys who we know we can play, and then the rest is just like a mystery. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all, you know, all of these guys have played and key snaps and played roles in these first two games where Iowa has won the game. So, you know, these are good problems to have versus, you know, having no depth on the offensive line, and you have two guys who you know we can play, and if another one, you know, one gets hurt or one's out, then you're really in trouble,
right,
on the interior. So, but I like what I was seeing from Britt at right guard. I think that he's earned the right to start this game. And I think that he's going to, you know, I don't know how much, you know, Schott is going to play or how much they're going to, you know, get him out there. So I expect to see a heavy dose of Britt at right guard for sure on Saturday.
Yeah, and the other thing we should mention, and this is a lot of, you know, it's an Iowa podcast. You're going to get offensive line talk. But Kyler Schott, his return is big also. In another way, because he is the backup center. He's Iowa's preferred backup center if something were to happen to Tyler Linderbaum. And we saw in the opener that just about had to happen when Linderbaum, you know, got injured. He stayed in the game, obviously. But who's to say maybe they don't try to, you know, if they get a big lead, maybe lighten Linderbaum's load just a little bit on Saturday and put Schott at center for a while and let some of those younger guys, you know, stay in there at guard later in the game. So, got lots of options there. Anything else that stood out today, Kennington, from media interviews? We had kind of an interesting collection of guys. No Spencer Petras. That was notable, I think.
Right.
That was actually maybe the most notable thing because the quarterback is almost always there. Did you make anything out of that or anything else you heard today?
I don't know. Not necessarily. You know, I come from, again, leaning on my Georgia experience, SEC country, you know, looking at Georgia, because I follow them, JT Daniels doesn't really, who's Georgia's starting quarterback for those who don't know, or Stetson Bennett, depending on the week. You know, they don't make regular availabilities either. So, you know, as Petras being out, you know, it's interesting because I think he's been available just about every single time we've had an availability. But not this week. I feel like it was fine. Nothing really stuck out in terms of what players said. I just think that a lot of that is just because, you know, the opponent this week, you know, it's not really, this isn't a game of like the same magnitude as like a Indiana or Iowa State, all respect due to Kent State there. So it's a little bit more of like a chill atmosphere. I definitely think, mm-hmm. though, that a major talking point is, and this is something to consider for Iowa fans who think this is going to be a layup, if you have been paying attention to the first few weeks of the college football season, big teams are losing to small teams,
yep.
at a very high clip. And yeah, if they're not losing, teams are coming very, very, very close to losing. These games are going down to the wire. So, you know, usually, you know, we read things or we hear players say, you know, we treat every game like it's, you know, the Super Bowl, or, you know, we treat every game as important. We're taking it 1 week at a time and we can easily roll our eyes. But if you're looking and paying attention to what's happening this year, specifically in college football, mm-hmm. I don't think that is really blowing smoke. So that's something that I guess stuck out to me, is just like everybody, players wise, was very much on the same page. It's like, you know, we're not looking at this as a development game for us, you know, to get reserves, and we're not looking at this as, you know, a week off for us. Like, we truly believe that Kent State is a dangerous team, and they are. I have something going up on this on Hawk Central in a little bit that, you know, Kent State, they can present a few problems for them, and I think that they're taking seriously, and they're not trying to take this opponent lightly.
Well said. Last thing I wanted to talk about, and by the way, I do think the way Iowa operates, first of all, I asked this to Kirk Ferentz too, and I don't know if he realized this, but he's had high-ranked teams before, like many times in his career, five or six probably, where they've been in the top 10. Well, we know that, obviously. But they've never been this high this early in the season, ever. I mean, even in 2002, of course, they lost early the season to Iowa State. 2009 was a slower climb up the rankings. 2015, obviously, same deal. It took a long time to get way up there. So they're not used to being in this spot. The only year they really started high was 2010, and that didn't work out. But anyway, so I do think that overall the way Iowa operates serves them well, that they really treat every game the same. And one guy that we did talk to today that was Charlie Jones, who I thought was it was interesting to hear from him, because he transferred from a MAC school and he knows very well. He made a comment that there's a lot of players in the MAC that are just as good as in the Big Ten or SEC. I mean, my favorite NFL team, their best players from the MAC, Khalil Mack from Buffalo. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there like that. Antonio Brown, right? I mean, former elite, elite receiver. Yeah, Miami of Ohio. I mean, you just go down the list. A lot of guys. And Ferentz did say this quarterback, you know, stands out to him.
Right. And Ferentz spoke to how much Iowa recruits out of the that was pretty funny how much they poach. That was a funny sidebar in availability today, was when he was asked about, you know, how much do you pay attention to when guys get MAC offers, or, you know, how, if you could ballpark, how many guys have you poached from MAC schools or whatever the case is. And he said, you know, quite a lot. He pointed to Terry Roberts as an example off the top of his head. But, you know, these are players who, you know, once you get to that level of offer, like you're at a high, you know, group of five level, power fives are going to take a look at you and evaluate you to see if they think that you could play on this level. And he admitted today that has happened, you know, a lot of the time. And again, MAC school, Northern Illinois beat Georgia Tech week one. Toledo took Notre Dame to the wire. So Charlie Jones, team's leading receiver, like you said, from the MAC. So there are players from this conference.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, Ferentz definitely had a lot of positive things to say about the conference and a lot of respect for what they do at that level.
All right, last thing we should mention, Iowa-Penn State on October 9th is sold out. So Kinnick Stadium will be full, 69,250. I'm sure there's secondary market, that's the word, tickets available for you, but you can't go through university anymore to get tickets. Will be interesting to see, Kennington. Let's end the podcast with this. Will both teams, Iowa and Penn State, I don't know if you looked at their schedule, but I have, be 5-0 going into that game. Right now, both teams are 2-0. Iowa ranked 7 by the coaches at Penn State 12. I think it's 5-10 in AP.
Yeah. Iowa for sure will be 5-0. Penn State, I don't know who they have after Auburn. I do believe
it's Villanova and Indiana. But all of these games are at home, though.
Okay.
What do you think about Auburn, Penn State? There you go. How about we ask you that? Because that's probably their biggest chance at a loss.
Yeah, I think that they will. I think they'll defeat Auburn. You know, and that's not me, you know, trying to talk down on Auburn because they're a rival of Georgia. But
that's
you know,
how
just,
I took it.
just looking at Auburn's makeup. You know, they have done very well the first two games of the season. They haven't played a team nearly of the same quality that they're going to play Penn State. Penn State's already battle tested. They went on the road. They beat a good Wisconsin team. The game is at home. It's going to be a night game. That is going to be That's going to be a brutal environment for Auburn to walk into. I think that this is going to be a game for Auburn that Bo Nix, their quarterback, is going to have to kind of put on his shoulders. If you are familiar with kind of with Bo Nix and how he's fared at Auburn the last few years, he's very boom or bust, and that is going to be quite a wave to ride when you're kind of walking into this atmosphere. But I think Penn State is a program, kind of like Iowa, who is re-energized after what happened last year. They obviously had not a successful year as Iowa did last year, but this is a team who's energized. They seem to be hitting on all cylinders, and I think that you know they'll be able to take care of business, which sets up a 5-0 matchup and a top 10 matchup, another one for Iowa this year. So
long way to go to that, but
right.
Yeah, I could, and I'm not we'll see with Maryland. I'm interested to watch Maryland the next few weeks. Terps look pretty good so far, and interestingly, they get Kent State next week. So we'll get to kind of compare apples and apples on that Iowa Maryland. And so, all right, 1 minute left, Kennington. I hate to tell you guys this, but Kennington is still not going to cover his first game at Kinnick Stadium this week because one last wedding, and then after that, you don't get to do these anymore.
Right.
But this was pre-job, so.
Right.
Give us a 30-second explanation.
Seventh wedding this year. I am in the wedding again as a groomsman. I'm also DJing this wedding, so this is kind of like a dual mission for me, but I'm super excited. I promise you I will get a chance to see a home game in Kinnick.
Colorado State, baby.
Colorado State, which would be a good warm-up to Penn State. But after this week, I'm locked in for the rest of the season.
All right, man. Well, we will miss you on Saturday, but we will still hear from you tomorrow night on our Hawk Central radio show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this subscriber edition of the Hawk Central podcast. We'll have more previewing the actual game tomorrow night. And then listen to me and Dargan Southard, who's going to help me out Saturday night for our post-game podcast after Saturday's 2:40 p.m. kickoff on BTM. Iowa, Kent State. Continuing the conversation the rest of the week, catch our coverage at hawkcentral.com. Thanks for tuning in.